Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Hey, this is Hack the Entrepreneur. Thank you so much for joining me again today. I'm your host, John Naster, but you can call me Johnny. My guest today is a chef, cake decorator, super connector, and an absolutely relentless entrepreneur. She began decorating cakes at 16 years old and spent countless years honing her skills. Then in 2004, she started her own bakery called Three Sweeties. Over the next 10 years, she grew her business, began teaching and mentoring others, and then eventually sold her bakery to move full-time into teaching and blogging. She now runs the popular blog, The Business of Baking, and I absolutely love how she sums up the blog's philosophy so well. Love yourself, love your clients, love your craft, be grateful, kick ass. And do all of that with gratitude. Now, let's hack Michelle Green. All right, so as much as you probably want me to let it go, the fact that it's 2018 and a brand new year, but I can't quite yet because I want you to do this with me. For the next 12 weeks, I'm going to learn 12 different things by taking 12 different courses from Skillshare. And you can do the exact same thing for just 99 cents, less than $1 for the next 3 months. Last week, I started a guitar course. This week, I'm learning SEO. It's an introduction to SEO, tactics and strategies for entrepreneurs by Mr. SEO himself, Rand Fishkin, the founder of Moz. Absolute SEO wizard. I'll be honest with you. One of my goals for 2018 is to get more visitors to the website. SEO is how I'm going to do it. That's what I'm learning. What are you going to learn? Well, with Skillshare, you have 17,000 classes to choose from. Skillshare is basically the Netflix for online learning. Skillshare classes are taught by industry experts and experienced professionals. Perfect if you're looking to build a career or start that side hustle of your dreams. And you know why I want you to try it so badly right now? Because Skillshare is giving you, the Hack the Entrepreneur listener, a 3-month trial for just 99 cents. That's right, a 3-month trial for 99 cents. You just have to go to skillshare.com/hack99. That's skillshare.com/hack99 and get started learning today. We are back with another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. And today we have a very, very special guest. Michelle, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, John. Thanks for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Absolutely my pleasure. I'm sorry for intruding on your vacation time, but we all here greatly appreciate you taking the time.
No problem.
All right, let's jump into it, shall we?
Do entrepreneurs ever go on holiday?
There we go. There, yeah, that's that. I guess that's more clarification for it. All right, Michelle, you are a lady who wears, I'm going to say, many different hats. Today we are talking to Michelle, the entrepreneur. So as an entrepreneur, Michelle, can you tell me, what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
I would say that's showing up, like endlessly showing up. It's very interesting. I've noticed recently, I'm part of a lot of female entrepreneur groups in general, and I notice how many of them start doing something and then just stop doing something. Either they, you know, blog for a month and then they stop blogging for a month, or they design some amazing website and then they don't launch it for fear of being seen, or they kind of say, oh, I really should do this thing, or they kind of like non-starters, or actually more accurately, non-finishers. And so I think if I had to say the one thing that's been my key to success is I actually do stuff. I actually just get it done endlessly. And if it doesn't work, I try the next thing. And if it doesn't work, I try the next thing. Or if it works kind of, I modify it and then do it again. I'm really a doer. And I actually think that that has probably been my number one key to success. It's not that I'm smarter than anybody else. It's not that I'm more clever or more lucky or more whatever. I just kind of keep showing up. And the more you show up, the more stuff happens.
Yeah, it's hard, very, very, very hard to argue with that, because that's absolutely it. And so lots of people do launch things, or they start blogging for a month and then they stop. They start podcasting for 3 weeks and then they stop. It happens all the time. And how long did you, Michelle, have to blog? Like at the Biz of Baking, how long did you have to blog before it dawned on you that this was like, could be a real business?
Actually, I kind of went about it in a backwards way, John. So I didn't blog for the sake of blogging. I actually originally started the Business of Baking as a live class. people came to my bakery and I taught them how to run a bakery, and I had like six people there. And I kept noticing that this class is actually started out with four people. And I was like, okay, four is better than zero, right? Mm-hmm. At $100 a head at the time. And then I did it again and six people came, and I did it again and eight people came. And that's was when I went, I think this could be a business. And if in my small, relatively small city of Melbourne, Australia, I could get people to keep showing up to this class, what did that mean for the need for this information on a global scale? And so I started the blog after I'd already tested it out as a live business idea. And to this day, 4.5 years later, it's still a blog, but it's also still a live class that I teach globally. And so the blog itself was born from knowing there was a business idea there, but not necessarily having tested what it would be like on a global scale. And the blog itself didn't make me any money as a blog until, maybe year and a half later. You know, I kind of never kept track of that. I was there to, and I didn't go into it for that reason. I went into it to disseminate the information and teach the information I didn't have when I started my small business. And so because I didn't look at it originally as I did, and I went, I think there's something here, but I didn't really formulate that into a proper plan until sometime later. Originally, it was just, this many people want this information in my hometown. Wonder how many people want this information on a global scale? Like that was it. And I just kind of kept going. And I am also one of these people who, as much as I keep showing up, like I was saying before, I also keep showing up knowing that I'm only going to ever commit to things that I can actually follow through with. So like, I'm not a big resolution maker. I'm not I'm going to blog every day kind of person. That's not who I am. I decided that bakers in general tend to be Monday and Tuesday are their quietest days. So like, my original commitment was, I'm just going to blog once a week on a Tuesday and see what happens. Now at the time, the collective wisdom around blogs was you have to be producing content every day. And I just went, that's not going to happen while I'm raising a family and running a small business. So yeah, the blog, it's still, by the way, you know, all these years later, I still publish every Tuesday. So there you go. Something about that formula is working.
You really do stick to that, just showing up continually. And so to be clear unto the listener, this small business that you're talking about it wasn't an education business. It was a bakery, correct?
Oh, yeah. It was a bakery, and we made custom cake, like custom wedding cakes and custom birthday cakes and that kind of stuff. And the Business of Baking was born out of the fact that around that time, so now it was a bit, I started teaching before I started blogging. So around the time that I started teaching, American television blew up with cake shows. So like Bake Boss and Ace of Cakes and, you know, Cupcake Wars and all those shows blew up. And the genesis of Business of Baking came because all these TV shows were happening. And those TV shows finally reached the shores of Australia. And I was getting a ton of phone calls from people, two sets of phone calls. One from people who were saying, hey, Michelle, I know you run this business. How did you make it happen? Can I buy you a coffee? And kind of, you know, bend your ear about it. And the other half was people calling me, customers of mine calling me, telling me that unfortunately they couldn't order from me because their neighbor offered them something for really cheap. And then calling me 2 days later and telling me that the neighbor backed out. So I kept thinking, I think there's something in this. There's got to be something in this. And so I realized that there was a real need for education and professionalism on how to run a small business, in specific, how to run a cake business. And so that's what I started teaching. But I never intended to do that. I started out life as a pastry chef and was happily making hundreds of cakes and cupcakes and whatever else you want. And then I just realized that, you know, maybe if I can just tell people my story. And again, I never really set out to be some kind of guru. I just went, maybe I'll just tell people what I learned along the way. And that's what I did then. And that's what I do now. That hasn't changed, actually. Not even one iota. Just tell them in a different way.
Yeah, exactly. But having, like, so there's a lot of people out there who probably listening even who have like a really specific, really valuable skill set, like making fancy cakes. And they would love to be able to teach that, especially on a global scale. But there's 1,000 things in front of them, or at least that's how they see it, that stop them from even starting.
Oh, yeah.
How did you sort of like overcome that hurdle? Like the technical, the like, how should I do this content stuff? Where should I do it? All that sort of stuff. Like, what was sort of your next step?
So I think probably all of that is predicated on the fact that I believe in done is better than perfect. I have never been somebody who stresses out about technology or worries that it's not going to be right. And so literally the very first thing I did was I went, I wonder if I could teach a class like this. Now, for me, that was not such a big leap because I was already teaching cake decorating, the skill of piping and, you know, filling cakes and whatever. So I already had a class timetable. So I just added a class to that called How to Start a Cake Business. I allocated 3 hours to it. I cannot tell you where that 3-hour decision came from, other than I thought that's about as long as I thought people would want to listen to me carry on. And I sat down and thought, if I had 3 hours and I could tell people what they want to know, what would I tell them? And I literally had 3 topics, one which was pricing, because everybody worries about money, right? One which was marketing, how do I get more orders? And the third of which was really, you know, when I think about it now, it sounds kind of life coachy, but it was really about like, why are you doing this? Why are you in business? Because I think a lot of entrepreneurs, yeah, some of them are born, right? That kid who had the, you know, lemonade stand when they were 5 or whatever. But I think a lot of them are created. And particularly in my industry, the vast majority of them are accidental entrepreneurs, right? They saw something on TV or they tried some new recipe or something. And then all their friends are like, wow, these are amazing. You should so sell these. You'd make a fortune. They never intended to be entrepreneurs. They got sucked into that life. So that was my third topic, was kind of like, if you're going to do this whole business thing, like, why are you doing this? Because liking cake is really not a great reason to stay in business.
So what is a great reason? Like you say how we are. I 100% agree that I think a lot of us just get sucked into it. Most of us didn't start at like 5 years old mowing lawns. It's we kind of get sucked into it. And like looking back, it makes sense. But going through it, it doesn't always. But like what is a good reason to start a business?
I think the real reason is you can't have one good reason. I think you have to have several good reasons. And for me personally, those reasons hinge on so many things, right? One is financial. I knew that I would make more money being in business by myself or for myself than I would working for somebody else. The second is that I'm a terrible employee, like the worst employee you've ever met. Not that I'm not good at my job, but that's the problem, that I ask too many questions and I don't particularly like following rules, and managers hate managing me because I'm always like, why do we do it this way? Can we do it that way? What if we did it this other way? So I'm an irritating employee. The third was about lifestyle. I had at the time small children. I'm a mom to triplets. And I knew I always wanted to be a working mom. I was never going to be a stay-at-home mom, but also triplets kind of take over your life. So I knew that I had to have the kind of job that would allow me to like get up and go pick up a sick kid or whatever I needed to do. So there was lifestyle considerations. There was so many reasons that actually had very little to do with the product. And I often say, like, if I hadn't fallen into cake, if I'd fallen into like, I don't know, widget making or sock making or coding or whatever, the product to me is irrelevant. It was all about all the other stuff. It was about the money. It was about the lifestyle. It was about the whatever. And a big part of it, which I've never heard anybody else admit, so I'm just going to put it out there, was ego. It made me feel important to be the boss. Still does, by the way. And I think there's something to be said for that. Like, I like being the boss. I like that people admire me for the fact that I do my own thing. Like, that's part of it, you know? Nobody ever says that, but I'm totally going to say that.
Nobody ever does say that.
And that's important.
Because as you say it, it's like, I can picture myself like, yeah, exactly. I love that. I love being able to tell people that, no, I'm my own. I do my own thing.
Yeah.
I don't have somebody that I have to answer to.
Yeah.
Why don't we talk about that?
You're almost is there 400... one reason for being in business? No, I have like 20 of them, but none of them are the product.
Okay. And now the business has completely shifted, has it not? From bakery.
Yeah. So I sold the bakery. I sold the bakery, which was in fact always my plan. As anybody who's ever been a chef will know, it really kills your body. Like, it just wrecks your back, and the hours are really unsociable, particularly for pastry chefs. And you never have a weekend, because there's this pesky thing that people have parties and weddings on weekends, which I feel is so unreasonable, but that's how the world works. So I sold the bakery, and I used some of the proceeds from the bakery to pay myself a salary as a blogger for 6 months. And I decided that if at the end of 6 months I couldn't make the blogging thing work, that I would go back to just a normal chef job. But I have yet to go back. So it seems to be working pretty well so far.
Wow. So the basic, so the bakery itself was wrecking your body, so you can only do it for so long, but it was also really hampering your sort of reason number three, which is lifestyle.
Oh yeah. By a long, long, long way. It was helping my lifestyle in that, yes, I could get up and pick up a kid if I wanted to, but it also meant that like I never saw a single Saturday game that any of my kids played for like 10 years.
So before we get too far into this conversation, I just need to stop for a second. I need to stop and ask you if you're like me, and when I used to hear that somebody ran a blog and literally made their living from that, supported their family on that, I used to be astounded, shocked, in awe, if you will. Now I just think it's awesome. And I hear it so often that it just, I think it's awesome and it doesn't blow my mind anymore. But I love that we've reached the point in our history as humans that we can do this work from wherever we want. And the reason why we can do these kinds of things is because of the technology. Technology like Squarespace that allows you to turn your cool idea into a website with no technical skills necessary. You can be like Michelle. You can blog and publish content. You can sell your products and your courses right from your website. Because Squarespace comes with beautiful templates designed by world-class designers and gives you the ability to customize the look and feel, settings, products, and more with just a couple of clicks. Everything is ready for you and optimized right out of the box. There's nothing to patch or upgrade ever. And when you get stuck, if you ever, ever do, they have award-winning 24/7 customer support. Now's your chance. Head over to squarespace.com for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use the offer code HACK to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. Go right now. Head to squarespace.com and get started with your free trial. All right. Let's get back to Michelle. So you decided to pay yourself for 6 months as a blogger.
Mm-hmm.
You told us earlier that you're still blogging every Tuesday.
Yeah.
What did you do with the other 5 days a week or 4 days a week?
Right. Well, the thing about blogging every Tuesday, that's really great, but it's not actually paying any bills. So the other 6 days a week, right? Because entrepreneurs never go to sleep.
Okay.
the other 6 days a week were spent doing lots of stuff, marketing, reaching out to people to do, you know, collaborations, sponsorship, education. I invested a lot in my blogging education at the beginning because I didn't know what I was doing. I was just writing articles. What did that do for anybody, you know? So I invested in education. I invested in marketing. I spent a lot of time learning. I spent a lot of time reaching out to people. Can I interview you? Can I this? Can I that? Can I the other? And also I was still teaching that live class. So I actually reached out to a colleague of mine who had a skill set in cake that I didn't have. She focused on a somewhat different area. And she and I put together a class as well. And then we started teaching that globally. And how did we start that? Literally, we whacked up a website, we put on some classes, and we just started marketing like crazy. And it worked.
Wow.
You know, slowly at first, but it worked.
Yeah. And so
those first 6 months, all about marketing and all about education and all about, okay, what the hell am I going to do next? Really?
Has it changed much or is that?
Nope, not at all.
Are you still in the education sense? Are you currently like using or have you since then used coaches, consultants, education?
For myself? Absolutely. Oh my God. Yes. At different times and for different needs. So sometimes I've done online classes and I've gone, yep, the information I need to know is pretty basic. You know, I'm just going to find this out. Other times I've hired business coaches to give me some advice on a specific thing I didn't know how to do. So as an example, year before last, I actually realized that I developed all these online classes related to the business of baking that were great classes, but they weren't kind of having the traction that I wanted. But because I'm such a doer and a shower-upper, not that that's a verb, but anyway, I'd created all these teeny tiny things, right? Like a class about pricing, a class about marketing, a class about this, a class about the other. And they were great, but it was kind of like, I don't know, it was just like patching together this random assortment of stuff. And so I hired a business coach to help me get more of a bird's eye view and go, okay, well, we've got all these teeny tiny things, but how can we turn this into a more cohesive, more relevant, more useful thing? And she really helped me to actually develop that into one of my bigger online class now, which is easily my biggest seller now and the thing I'm the most proud of actually from all of this. It's an online class called Build Your Profitable Cake Business. But that I was unable to do that on my own. I could see all these little parts and I really needed somebody to kind of go, yep, Michelle, here's a great way. Let's nut out a great way to get this together into one bigger thing. And I honestly have no problem with hiring people for education. I sort of think that's, firstly, I'm keeping their small business going. Secondly, they're helping me move mine to the next level. And I think it works really well. So yeah, no, education is still a really big part of what I do, but I don't get bogged down in, oh my God, what's that expression? Analysis paralysis? Is that what it's called? When people like buy a bunch of classes or hire a bunch of people and then don't do anything. For me, if I'm going to spend the money on something, you bet your butt that I'm going to be like squeezing every last bit of information out of it and making it work for me. So yeah, I still hire consultants. I still do classes, but I'm pretty picky about which ones I do.
And so taking a whole bunch of sort of disparate little courses or trainings that you had and sort of patching them together and turning it into one big Build Your Cake Business course, was the idea to take all those courses down so they're not for sale anymore and only have one focus to sell?
Yeah.
Or was it that it wasn't comprehensive enough to teach people?
No, that was precisely what I did. I took them all off the shelf for a period of about 6 months, which I can tell you was terrifying because at the time they were a pretty major income stream for me. Took them all off the shelf for 6 months and they are now not for sale at all like that. So I completely changed my model of doing business as opposed to having a whole bunch of evergreen small classes. I don't have that at all now. I just have my one big class that I launch twice a year. I mean, I do other things, live teaching and there's the podcast and whatever. But in terms of digital teaching, there's only now one class you can take from me. That's it.
And you launch it twice a year?
Yep.
Has the price changed at all throughout this?
It has not changed since I've turned it into a large class, but it has changed significantly from being a whole bunch of teeny tiny classes.
Yes. Right. Okay. All I was saying was because I know you're that whole like launch it done is better than perfect, but I thought maybe we'll try this pricing and see if it works better. Or it's like you just went with one and that's what's worked and you've stuck with it.
Yeah. The only difference is that when I did the very first launch, which was last year in March, it feels so weird saying last year because we're only just beginning 2018. But anyway, so last year in March, the only difference in price was that I offered a slightly better break on the price to people who had done my previous online classes. So because they were going to get some percentage of repeat content, obviously, I sort of felt like, you know what, I'll give them a little bit of a break, but that was a one-shot only deal. So I kind of went, if you guys want to upgrade, you can upgrade at this price. Everybody else plays full whack. And then the price, and now the price has not changed since then. That was a single one-shot deal.
Wow. Are you using like some sort of big launch strategy for these twice a year?
Yeah. So originally I was not. Originally I was like, oh, I'll just send some emails and see what happens, which is what I had done for all the tiny classes. I did a class called Zero to Launch, which basically outlines a launch strategy. And I had done that launch strategy several times with the mini classes. And that's what I was planning on doing with this one too. And then I was in a mastermind group, for those who don't know, although I can't imagine an entrepreneur that doesn't. It's just like a group of people who are all entrepreneurs and they hang out together and help each other out. It's like playgroup for grownups. And I was in a mastermind group and I was commenting about like how I wasn't sure if this strategy was going to work, but that I was going to give this a try or whatever. And one of the other people in that group said, hey, I'm like a launch specialist. Like that's my specialty. Here's some advice. And she gave me like a ton of free advice, which was really useful. But to be honest, some of it went completely over my head, like Facebook ads and retargeting and pixels and all this stuff that I was like, I have no idea what this woman is talking about. So I jumped on a Skype call with her and I said, look, the advice you gave me is terrific, but honestly, can I just pay you to do this? And she was like, well, sure. And this literally was less than, I think it was 2.5 weeks out from my proposed launch date. And she was like, okay, but that means for the next 2.5 weeks, like you basically belong to me. You need to go and produce videos. You need to go and write content. You need to write, I think it was 64 different emails. You need to go do all this work. And I was like, all right, I'm in. And yeah, so now I use her to help me with those launches, primarily because, you know, there's a point at which as an entrepreneur, you need to go, I know what I know and I know what I'm good at. And my life is not best spent over here. My time is best spent over there. So for me, I'm a really big super connector. Like I love talking to people. I'm happy to do Facebook Lives. You know, podcasting is not hard for me. The communication is not hard for me. You want me to sit and like redirect Facebook ads? Oh, I cannot think of anything worse. So I looked at it and I went, if this launch is going to work, I think I need to be the connector and she can be the tech person. And that relationship continues to this day and it works really, really well. I don't worry about any of the tech. I just worry about the talking.
But you,
or writing.
You also need to be coachable and you need to sort of put that ego aside that I'm not in charge right now because I need to trust this person and do what they say.
Yes and no. I have the opinion of I'm not in charge of that bit right now. I'm in charge of this bit. So it's not that I'm not in charge. It's that that bit is better done by people who are experts in this field.
Right.
Okay. I mean, it's like going to the doctor, right? I can't be in charge of the surgeon either. That's kind of his job. But I can also say to that doctor, that surgeon, here's the problem. Help me solve it. Here are the parameters. Help me solve it. Here's what I'm willing to do. Here's what I'm not willing to do. So it's something, you know, I guess I've never thought of it as being not in charge. I've thought of it as I need to let the experts do their job so that I can do my job that I'm an expert at. And in the beginning, it's scary. It's really scary. Like the first time I hired somebody to help me with social media, firstly, it took me about a year longer than it should have. And then when I finally hired somebody, I literally said to this person, I know you're just posting for me on Facebook, but I'm letting you know now, I'm going to be kind of nitpicky for a while until we figure it out. And she was like, okay, your business, your rules. All right, great.
Fair enough.
It was stressful, but I did that.
It is. Are you able to tell us who this launch specialist is?
Yes, her name is Tamara Baranova. She's at tamarabaranova.com. She's located in the UK and she's amazing. Nice. I'm one of her teeny tiny clients actually, but I imagine that, yeah, she like, you know, like I have very small budgets for things. She deals with people who have monthly budgets for ads and stuff in the six figures and that's not me.
Wow.
But she's amazing.
But she still was able to, I mean, turn your launches into something that made you really happy.
Oh my goodness. Really happy would be the understatement of the century.
Did that involve, like, does that involve changing what you were, like, sort of your offer to, or was the offer already good? And then it was just sort of how you got people to the offer.
I think the offer was already good because remember, I'd hired a different coach to help me figure that out. Actually, you know what I want to say about that? The offer was good, yes, but why it was good is not for reasons you might think. So yes, it was a good prospect. And yes, I knew people would like it. And yes, I knew it hit their pain points and all that kind of entrepreneurial has to appeal to your target market. Like I knew it had all of that. Like that's not the hard part. The difficult part for me was actually marrying that offering with what I wanted, which goes back to what I was telling you before about why I'm in business, right? The lifestyle, the money, the feeling important, all that kind of stuff. And so at the time that I was designing that class or putting together the details of that class, my industry was awash with subscription sites. Still is, in fact. Pay $15 a month from here to eternity, and we will give you content endlessly. Mm-hmm. And at the very beginning, I was like, I should totally do that. It's an endless income stream, right? It's volume, right? I only have to produce like one article a month or one whatever it is a month, and then people get what they want. Yay. And I was following that path for a little while, and then I kind of went, wait a second. This is not meeting any of my lifestyle requirements. My lifestyle requirements involve things like being able to travel at the drop of a hat and not being, I told you, I'm a crappy employee because I don't like having to show up when somebody else tells me to. And yet to me, a subscription site was, you become a slave to content. I didn't want to be a slave to content. That wasn't my thing. And remember, I also said that like human connection and communication is like my big overarching reason for being. I don't even know how to put that in a nicer way. It's like my reason for being. And so I was like, well, but if I'm just creating a subscription site where these people are passive and they log in whenever they want to, it's not really suiting me and what I know that I do well. And I feel like I'm just like leaving them to do their own thing. That's kind of not the point. I want to do way more handholding. So I scrapped that whole idea and started all over again, creating a class that involves 8 weeks of one-on-one coaching, not one-on-one, a small group coaching. There is the opportunity for some one-on-one, but there's 8 weeks of small group coaching. There's an interactive Facebook group. They get emails from me fairly regularly. It's a much more hands-on thing than most people were creating at the time, but it was so much more a reflection of what I wanted to deliver and what I was good at delivering and what I thought would appeal to people. But the part about it being a really good prospect, that was only half the story. The other half the story was, how is this thing going to fit into my life? How am I going to make this work with what I know my strengths are and what other people appreciate for me? So
yeah. now it's basically probably somewhere in the realm of like a 4-week sort of launch period and then an 8-week teaching period.
Correct.
Which puts you twice a year into 6 months of work and six months of blogging once a week.
Yeah, and traveling. So I still teach live classes, in-person classes. So the other 6 months, I travel the world and I teach live classes. And now I also podcast. So there's that as well. So the other 6 months of the year, I definitely still spent podcasting, marketing, content creation, all the same stuff I did at the very beginning, just obviously in a slightly more grown up way, I'd say.
Right. And so every time
I have to tell you that when that 8 week teaching period ends, I'm like genuinely sad for several weeks.
Oh, I thought you were going to say exhausted.
No, I'm sad. I'm actually absolutely lit up and fired up by it and sad. But okay, so part of why, again, this had to work for me is I don't believe in teaching people and then being like, yeah, see ya, bye. So what I did was it's 8 weeks of coaching, group coaching, but they have ongoing access to the online materials and they're all in a Facebook group together, which I personally moderate. I don't need any assistants, helpers, whatever to do that. And so I'm still connected with them. And several of those students actually will rejoin new rounds. They kind of go, oh, Michelle, I'd really like a refresher. And I allow them to rejoin new rounds. They're welcome to join the next round of 8 calls as well.
Wow. And so they get to partake in the live calls. So you buy in once and you get it forever.
Yeah.
That's an offer.
Which is totally against everything I've ever learned about this model of working, by the way.
So are you telling us that these businesses, you can build them how you want them to be?
I'm 100% telling you, your business, your rules.
I love it.
Always.
I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. This has been a fascinating and just fun conversation, Michelle. I just want to wrap up on one final question for you, if I may.
Sure.
It's this idea I'm working with calling the entrepreneurial gap. And I'm not sure if you're going to fall into this, but as entrepreneurs, we seem to always be projecting our personal successes into the future. Meaning in 1 month when you stand on that stage or in 6 months when you hit that revenue from a launch that you've always wanted to hit, that's when you'll see yourself as successful. Yet you and I both know seconds before that, you'll set 5 bigger goals into the future. And so it's like walking towards the horizon. The further you walk, the further away it always, always gets. So rather than looking forward, for a couple of minutes, I would love it if you could right now stop and turn around and look behind you. You've been at this for a long time. You built your own business. You got to exit that business and you've built another business that perfectly fits your lifestyle. The ups, the downs, the highs, the lows, the wins, the losses. Could you tell me how you feel about all of this crazy journey up until today?
Oh my God, that's like an insane question. How I feel about it. You know, I think it's 50% awe. Like, oh my God, I actually made this happen. Wow, that's amazing. And 50%, like, of course I made this happen and I cannot wait to see what comes next. I do try to stop and smell the roses every once in a while. And I do try to really ground experiences. And so, yeah, I know that sounds probably a bit egotistical to be like, of course I did it, but that showing up thing has always worked for me. So no reason why it shouldn't have worked for me in the past. But at the same time, I look back at all the things I've achieved and I think, I didn't know how to do any of that. Podcasting is a really great example. A bit over a year ago, I met a business coach who, after half an hour talking to me, said, have you ever thought about podcasting? And I went, I don't even know what a podcast is. And she went, oh, well, you should check that out. I'm like, okay. And that afternoon, I Googled how to start a podcast. And I found a class called Podcasting 101 on shepodcasts.com. And it's meant to be like, I think it's meant to be like an 8 week class or something, but I binge watched the entire thing in one day and jumped online and ordered a microphone. And 2 weeks later, I had a podcast. I don't know what a podcast is. I don't think I do it right. I just do it. So yeah, if I look backwards, I 50% go, well, of course I did it because that's just my thing. I just do stuff. And the other part of me is like, oh my God, how did I do that? I didn't even know how to do that. I still don't know how to do a bunch of stuff. Just kind of like figure it out and hope it'll be okay.
Such an awesome answer. Such an awesome answer. I'm completely in awe with myself and I'm completely like, of course I did this.
Yes,
so
that's
good.
The truth.
So good. All right, Michelle, we have talked about your business in passing and all through this conversation. Could you now specifically tell the listener, because I know you've intrigued them, tell the listener what the business of baking is, who it's for, and what it can do for them?
Sure. So the business of baking is now it's so many things. See, it was just a blog and now it's a blog and classes and a bunch of stuff. But you can primarily find all of that at thebusinessofbaking.com. And it's essentially used to be a straight up educational website on how to run a cake business. But these days it's expanded a lot. And it's really, honestly, it's just how to run a business. And I just tend to use cake as the medium. I'm very lucky to have lots of people who are in the cake business, but I've also got people who read the blog and my book and listen to the podcast who are, food makers of all kinds. And these days I have artists and all sorts of people. So if you are in the handmade or hand eating business, then you are definitely going to find a lot at the Biz of Baking. And some of it is instructional, like, you know, when's the best time to post on Facebook? And like, how do I write a business newsletter? And a lot of it is very how-to, hands-on, but some of it is more about this kind of more emotional stuff we spoke about earlier. How do I build a business that fits into my lifestyle? What do I do when my family is not supportive? All this kind of stuff. So if you Google the business of baking, you will find me everywhere because I'm very unoriginal at titles. And that's what everything I do is called. The book is called that. The blog is called that. The podcast is called that, etc. And it's not so much an educational website as it is a community, which has everything to do with the fact that that's important to me, that I connect and I build and I make people realize that they have it within themselves to keep on showing up. And if I'm the person who holds your hand to get there, well, more's the better. But everybody's got it in themselves to be an entrepreneur. They just don't necessarily, they wouldn't necessarily call it that. So yeah, business of baking is about, sure, the business of baking, but it's also about way, way, way more than that. Probably, I should really have called the website like the business of getting stuff done. Well, maybe that'll be my next iteration.
There you go. I love it. I love it. Thebizofbaking.com is the website, as well as all social media. I'll track down links to all of that and put them in the show notes for you, as well as Tamara Baranova, I believe.
Yep.
And I'll find a link to her as well, the launch specialist, and see if she could help you as well. Michelle, once again, thank you so much for taking the time out from your vacation for me. And thanks for sharing so openly and honestly. I really do appreciate it. And please, just keep doing what you're doing. It's awesome and inspiring to watch.
Will do, John, I promise. I don't know how to not do, so yeah, here I am on vacation. Doing, right? There you go. Thanks so much for having me as a guest today. I really appreciate it.
Michelle, thank you so much for taking time out of your holidays to speak with me and so early in the morning over in Australia. I absolutely appreciate it, and I'm sure you out there listening appreciate it as well. You can always stop by The Biz of Baking if you would like to tell her, or come over to Hack the Entrepreneur. I'll have her social media over there for you, and you can reach out and thank her yourself. She'd love to hear from you. I know it. All right, so going through the conversation was a lot of fun. I'm so happy that I got to speak with Michelle and got to ask her questions and have her open up for us. But we've now reached my favorite part of the show. It's the part where I go back. It's the part where I listen to the show again and I find that thing that Michelle said. So I did. And I did. I found it. Did you get it? Did you hear it? Let's do it. Let's find the hack.
And I often say, like, if I hadn't fallen into cake, if I'd fallen into, like, I don't know, widget making or sock making or coding or whatever, the product to me is irrelevant. It was all about all the other stuff. It was about the money. It was about the lifestyle. It was about the whatever. And a big part of it, which I've never heard anybody else admit, so I'm just going to put it out there, was ego. It made me feel important to be the boss. Still does, by the way.
And that's the hack. Michelle. Nearly 400 people have been on this show, and nobody has ever said this. You are absolutely right. And it's absolutely true. And I've said it before, and I've never thought about this way, but I've said it before that it takes, I like to think that I'm not an egotistical person, but I have to admit that I need to be. You need to be to a certain degree to want to build something, to want to make something that doesn't exist and put it out into the world. You have to be confident enough and egotistical enough to think that the world needs what you have to offer. And absolutely, don't get me wrong. Anything you have in mind right now, if you put your heart and soul into it, the world absolutely does need it. But it does take ego. There's going to be people who tell you that it's crazy. There's going to be people who tell you that what you create is no good. That's awesome. That's great. It doesn't matter what they think, but it does take ego to get over that. So this idea of it didn't matter if she was a coder, if she was making shoes, it didn't, the product is irrelevant. The other side to this that I love is that you don't have to necessarily quote unquote follow your passion. Your passion can be business. Your passion can be creating systems and processes or teaching people or helping people, whatever you want it to be. It doesn't necessarily have to be, in Michelle's case, baking is something she's super into, but as she says it, that isn't the point. The point isn't that. The point is that she's super into the business. She's into the business, what it gives her, the lifestyle, the money, and it makes her feel good because it's good for the ego. Michelle, thank you so very, very much. That was a lot of fun. It is still the beginning of 2018. I don't know when you're listening to this, but probably near the beginning of 2018. There's two things that could help the show so much as we head into this new year. First one, support any sponsors that you hear on the show, anything that you think would be of value to you or your business. It helps so much if you do reach out to them, take action, try out their trials if that's what it takes. Second one is a rating and a review wherever it is that you listen to this podcast. Maybe you're on Spotify right now. That's pretty awesome. Maybe you are on iTunes or Google Play or Stitcher Radio or iHeartRadio. Wherever it is, pick up your phone that's in your hand playing this right now in your ears. Find the place to leave a rating and review in that app. It exists. It's there. It'll take you 2 minutes and 46 seconds probably, and it will help immensely. And if you need anything from me, ever, John at Hack the Entrepreneur is my email. Absolutely feel free to reach out to me. I would love to hear from you. All right. It's been fun. I look forward to the next one with you. And please, until next time, keep hacking the entrepreneur.